Arizona.
Hey, I'm in from California today, out in the San Francisco Bay Area. What do you think of that, Hunter? Pretty fancy business, huh?
Yeah, lucky you.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, I see why people live here. The weather today is outrageous and fantastic. So I'm not rubbing that in because I'm at the airport and coming home. And, of course, no place I'd rather be, but back in the Twin Cities. But it is lovely out here. Hey, and I'm right inside the shadows of the big football stadium out here, the Levi's Stadium. I don't know if you follow sports stadiums. But big news on our U.S. Bank Stadium. And so I want to talk a little bit about that today, about how the funding for the U.S. Bank Stadium has come around, and I'll say more about that in a minute. But they've built this new stadium out here in the Bay Area, and my good friend lives here, and we were looking at it together, and I said, it's just really ugly. So say what you want. I'm going to say a lot of things about why I think we shouldn't spend our city and state tax dollars on sports stadiums. But Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minnesota, at least we have a pretty stadium. Say what you want about how we got it, but it's a beautiful thing compared to this one. The one out here, I don't know, it's a style. It's a particular kind of open design style. And if we had spent, I don't know, whatever number of billions of dollars on an ugly stadium, I think my feelings about these football stadiums would be even worse. But so I don't know if you followed, Hunter, what's going on, but one of the ways they're funding the Minneapolis or the Minnesota Stadium, the Viking Stadium, is with these taxes on gambling proceeds, specifically on pull tabs and other taxes like that.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, it's come around now. There was a long period of time when the revenue from the taxes on gambling wasn't enough. So the legislature made a decision to move $20 million a year into paying the building the reserve so they could pay off the debt on the stadium. And apparently now the revenues from taxes on gambling, especially on pull tabs, has been sufficient enough that we can stop moving $20 million a year out of the revenue from our general fund, and not have to set that aside in order to cover the stadium taxes. And what it did for me, hearing that news today and seeing that, which is apparently good news to people who support the stadium, it just rekindled this whole idea that we spend all of this money and are willing to back it up and make sure it's going to be there almost no matter what, whether it's taxes on gambling or taxes on corporations, which was where the money was coming from to fill the gap, that we're willing to spend money on things like this, on the infrastructure for a stadium. And part of what makes me so enraged about this is that the same time today in the Star Tribune newspaper is a story about how they finally are starting to move the people from the encampment in Minneapolis, the homeless who are living in the encampment, finally able to start moving those people into some kind of temporary housing. And it's just that juxtaposition once again that we make these, what seem to me to be these wrong-headed decisions about funding football stadiums, in this case, or it could be a soccer stadium or a baseball stadium or any kind of sports stadium. And we will come up with $20 million a year just to make sure that the debt is serviced on that, and then act like it's a heroic effort when we can find money for the most vulnerable in our society. And it just, it's once again the place for me that just where it feels like the line is being crossed, when what we really could be doing is making sure that we're funding projects like $20 million worth of housing for people who are unsupported in their housing needs. And it makes my mind crazy. So I'd love to hear other people's thoughts about it. If people have comments, I'd love to spend I could spend a whole hour talking about this, but we won't, because it's water under the bridge, you could say. But I would love to get people's feedback on it. So if you want to give a call into the station, I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. But Hunter, how are you thinking about that? Have you totally given up? Are you giving up on your anxiety around the funding of stadiums and all the rest?
I don't have much anxiety about that. But I love how you framed it that way. How easy it was to come up with that money, but for a couple of people, homeless out in the Minnesota cold, it's a heroic effort and impossible to come up with ideas for it.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I get it. Like, I'm an adult and I understand the fact that we tend to in our society think that the homeless are homeless for reasons of their own doing, right? And that causes people, I think wrongly in our society, to believe that, and then causes them to think, well, there's no reason to throw good money after bad, and there's no reason to help people who are unhelpable. But it's just clearly not the case that that people are unable to be helped, and that there's nothing we can do about it. Providing just basic care, physical needs to be met, seems to me that should be one of the infrastructures that we talk about in any modern day society, that we really do think about it as like we would having sidewalks, like we would having clean drinking water available to people, that we would just consider it at the most fundamental level to be a basic infrastructure, a basic commodity that that we're going to make sure we always have available to the people of our state. And when there's insufficient housing, which there clearly is insufficient housing for people, we can end up saying to ourselves, well, there's not enough money. You know, we can't fund everything, right? This kind of argument. And then you realize, well, now because of these kinds of revenues, we now have $20 million more that we were willing to pull out of other expenditures. And I would just love to see someone in the state of Minnesota make the argument that all of that money should go to pay for education and to pay for housing for the most vulnerable in our society. It just seems to me to be the most basic kind of choice that you could make about this.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah. And I don't hear anyone doing it. I don't hear any of our progressive politicians saying anything about it. I don't hear really anyone making any kind of a claim at all that that they want to see that happen. I don't understand it. I would love to see all of our candidates be asked, do we really believe that we could take care of and fund the most basic needs for people in the state of Minnesota? Anyway, so that was big news in the Star Tribune today, both of these stories. Now, on the side of the encampment, I know a lot of listeners pay a lot of attention to that story because it's such an important one. Apparently, we've really figured out with some good hard work and some coalition building in the city of Minneapolis, have figured out what to do about providing housing for some of the most vulnerable. And yesterday and today, they've started moving people into a temporary shelter. So if you haven't followed the story, it's really worth looking at because the big decision, the big move, the thing that makes this different than any of the other options is that the city is supporting a temporary shelter where people are able to come and stay in the shelter. And there's two features of it that I found to be meaningful. One is that while drug and alcohol use in the shelter is forbidden, and I think it needs to be, if you are determined to be under the influence of drug or alcohol, you can still access the shelter, where most of the other shelters that were available, if a screener determined you to be someone who was under the influence of chemicals, they wouldn't let you in. And untreated chemical dependency is a huge issue for a lot of people in our society. And it's a big issue for people who struggle with having sufficient housing and for people that live on the street. So when you make that a rule that you can't partake of the services that are available for housing if you're under the influence of drug or alcohol. That's a huge number of people that end up on the street because of that. And you can say that there's an incentive built in. You can say the incentive is that if you say to people you're not going to have housing, that'll make you stop. But if you know anything about drug and alcohol dependency, that's not how it works. And the other big issue that they've been willing to change the typical pattern on is that there's no curfews in the shelter. In other words, most shelters say you have to be in by a certain time and you can't leave till any time in the morning. So you can't access the shelter, say, between 10 o'clock at night and 6 o'clock in the morning. This shelter, the temporary shelter that they have as an alternative to people living in the encampment, are not making that kind of a requirement. Now, I think that's really good news. I don't know all the issues that go into people living on the street the way that a lot of people do, but I think that both of those changes, especially the curfew, allows people to be treated with more dignity and with more respect, and it's going to allow people to access those shelters all that much more. So I think those are really good developments. And the idea now that there's all this money that's available because of the tax revenue that was going to the stadium that could provide some housing, and a change in some of the attitudes of government officials and people providing housing, I think we could be on the cusp of something. I think that what has been negative for a very long time, we could really be facing something significant. So I'd love to talk with people about that if you want to give a call into the station, but we'll be back here after the break. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota.
Common Good Books will help you find the perfect book for all your holiday shopping. There's no better place to find that special gift for the book lover in your life. Pick up a new book or get a gift card at Common Good Books, your locally owned and independent bookseller in the Twin Cities. Whether you're shopping for a child, teen, or adult reader, they'll help you get just the right gift. Find Common Good Books at 38 South Snelling Avenue in St. Paul or at commongoodbooks.com.
Need sides to complement your intimate or large holiday gatherings? Let It's Greek to Me cook for you and yours. Enjoy their house-made spanakopita, roast potatoes, Greek pastizio lasagna, Mediterranean salads, and desserts. We have you covered. Let our gracious catering take the pressure off. Take out or dine in at the restaurant, and our new marketplace is full of holiday goodies imported from our family and friends in Greece. Find It's Greek to Me at 626 West Lake Street in Minneapolis or at itsgreektomemn.com.
Vacuum cleaner. You buy them, you break them, and then you throw them away, right? Well, if you're ready to break out of that vicious cycle, we have the answer. Never heard of A1 Vacuum? They've been around forever, offering better alternatives. So if you're ready to stop filling the landfill, give A1 Vacuum a shot. Located in Roseville and ready to show you something better. Find them at a-1vacuum.com or call 651-222-6316. Better yet, drop by.
Get away and relax this winter at Big Bear Lodge. Come experience a Northwoods winter in modern yet authentic woodsy cabins. It makes a perfect gift this holiday season for couples who want more together time, families who want more family time, or any winter enthusiast who wants to spend a relaxing weekend in a winter wonderland. And right now, if you book a stay of at least 2 nights in one of 3 guest rooms at Big Bear Lodge, you'll get 1 night half off. Just mention AM 950 when you call. Come find your smile at BigBearLodgeMN.com.
At Pride Institute, being LGBTQ+ is the norm, not the exception. Their highly trained and skilled staff understand your issues and will help you live a happy, healthy life as a proud LGBTQ+ person. They offer you hope to overcome your addiction and live the life you want. Their treatment programs are designed to assist you in developing the knowledge, skills, and attitudes for long-term recovery. Therapy groups include health education, LGBTQ issues, HIV and chronic illness, trauma, grief and loss, transgender support, nicotine recovery education, and sexual health. Pride Institute offers a residential treatment program, a partial hospitalization program that includes day programming with lodging, and an intensive outpatient program. If you or someone in your life can benefit from guidance and coping skills, life balance, and other tools necessary for long-term recovery, check them out at pride-institute.com or call 800-547-7433 now.
Born in the USA.
back AM 950, Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Doug Padgett in, ringing in from outside of San Francisco, California, out in San Jose, and heading home today. I was out here doing a little bit of work and a couple of notices of their stadium and thought, boy, they've spent a lot of money on this stadium. And started thinking about our own and saw the big news today that the state of Minnesota can stop putting $20 million a year into underwriting the debt service that's going to be responsible for the state on the stadium. And I don't necessarily want to rekindle the old debates in states about whether we should be giving tax breaks to millionaire sports teams. I have a very clear opinion about that, and I've changed my opinion on that. I used to think it was a reasonable choice that you would say it's part of the infrastructure that you need to build for a world-class city, and that if you're going to be a world-class city, then you need to offer the kinds of amenities that world-class cities offer, and having top-notch sports teams is clearly communicated as one of those. So I can see why people would make that argument. I don't hold that view anymore. I think that there's enough money inside the sports industries to pay for all of that, that it doesn't actually require us to have these kinds of amenities in our society for it to be something meaningful and something attractive in our city. If we were to say the city of Minneapolis takes care of its most vulnerable, takes care of the poor and the marginalized in our societies in ways that no other city does, that feels like the kind of infrastructure that we'd want to have. And that would produce a kind of revenue for us that we couldn't even imagine. So I know there's a lot of people who do really great work on this. And if you're one of those, if you work in the area of working with the marginalized or with the homeless, I'd love to hear your thoughts, 952-946-6205. But I think it's time. I think we're going to have an opportunity in 2019 and 2020 because of budget revenue in the state of Minnesota, and specifically because of there's going to be this money that will be available again for us to rekindle a conversation about how we should be engaging as a society. And if you take away all the costs that there are in the rest of our budget that go into caring for people who are in need of housing support and in need of care and stability so that they can have a more stable life, you'd see great kind of return by investing in housing specifically. And here's what I do know. So if this is a new topic to you, you can trust me on this one. The people who work with those who are in need and are living on the street will tell you, if you can help someone secure safe, respectable, consistent housing, that is a step that opens up opportunities for all other kind of life change. If you can imagine your own life, if you didn't have a place that you felt safe to live, safe to sleep, and safe to store whatever amount of possessions you own, how much more difficult your life is if you're not in a place where you could feel those kinds of security. It exacerbates all the other pressures that lead someone to living homeless. That's why so many of us go to such great extent to fund nonprofits or to allow people to stay in our homes or to have our family members stay with us, because we know that if you don't have that kind of stability, if you don't have a life that allows you to function and to get along and sleep through the night. The Star Tribune has a great article about some of the people moving out of the encampment, and some who've been there for months. And this encampment, if you're unfamiliar, is, you know, it's over on the east side of Minneapolis along Hiawatha Boulevard. And it was really a prophetic act for a number of people, initially people from the native communities, that started to pool together their resources and put up tents. And it grew very quickly when other people who were suffering from the struggle of not having housing and being homeless all pooled together, and it created a moment, and it became dangerous. Frankly, it was dangerous for the people living there. It was dangerous for people who were trying to support those who were in the encampment. You can't get along with a lack of infrastructure and hundreds of people living outside and staying in this kind of conditions for the long term. And it's been months and months that this has been going on. So it became really dangerous, and trying to stay warm in the wintertime was causing fires, and it was an unsafe circumstance. The thing that I find prophetic about it, though, and the reason that I cheer on the people who put the encampment together and all the people who are supporting those in the encampment, is that it raised the issue. It took that which seems invisible to a lot of us, and because of it pooling all these people together, it made that thing that was invisible, which is people living without housing support, it made it much more visible and became an issue that then had to be dealt with. We found a way to sort of divide up the homeless enough where it wasn't enough of a pressure point on any of the systems to say we have to find a new way to respond to it. So this encampment really provided a kind of a spark that caused people to have to say, we're going to do something about it. And the people, when you read the stories, or if you've spent any time down at the encampment, I'd especially love to hear from you if you spent any time there, 952-946-6205. If you were supportive of the encampment, or if you brought food, or maybe you brought resources down, blankets or socks or firewood or anything. When you hear the stories of the people who are in the encampment saying that they're going to get into some kind of permanent house, some kind of temporary, safe, stable housing. It's not permanent in the sense that they're going to be there for long term, but it's permanent in the sense that they're not in a tent. So they started moving into this this temporary facility that has more of a permanent feel. People are saying things like, I haven't slept through the night in months, or I feel so endangered and I can't wait to be in a place where I'm going to feel safe. You might remember back to, you know, I don't know, sixth grade health class when they talked about the basic hierarchy of needs that Maslow, a psychiatrist and psychologist, suggested that there's a hierarchy that if certain needs are not met, you're not going to move on to caring for others, other issues in your life. And the basic needs of food and water and safety and protection are right there. And that's what's happening on the housing front. That's what's going on. And to be able to say as a society, and I think the state of Minnesota should try to make itself a homeless-less state. There should be a huge commitment, financial commitment, social commitment, to say to people, we will do what we have to do to be sure that first your housing needs are met. And part of what they're doing with this temporary housing, again, which I mentioned in the first segment, which I think is really important, is worth us thinking about, is to move away from a much more punitive attitude toward people who are homeless. That there's this sense that you want to give people incentive to get out of their homeless situation. And the idea that you're going to punish someone by not giving them housing until they behave the way that you think is more appropriate for someone to receive housing, that is so backward. What people don't need incentive to not be homeless. Homeless people need support to not be homeless. You spend 3 weeks yourself living on the street in the city of Minneapolis and see if you don't have an incentive to not live on the street. Of course they do. Now, there are complicated issues for some people, and there's going to be a small minority of people who live on the street who want it that way. And I know people like this. I have some friends who live on the street, and they're committed to it no matter what. But there's a whole lot of other people who want something much different. So I'd love to chat about that. If you want to call 952-946-6205, AM 950, Progressive Voice of Minnesota.
You'll be all right. All he gives is a humbug pill, a dose of dope and a great big bill. Tell me, how can a poor man stand such times and last?
This holiday season, think outside the everyday chocolate box. Make a splash with your friends, family, and clients with elegantly packaged artisan chocolates from Chocolat Celeste. Come taste the intoxicating flavor of the finest European chocolate, handcrafted with love by founder and chocolatier Mary Leonard. Mary and her staff will help you understand the kind of chocolate that everyone wants and dreams about. Watch while the recipient opens the box. It's like a beautiful piece of holiday artwork. Then watch them taste the sweet and complex flavors.
This holiday season, Chocolat Celeste has created an artisan collection for AM 950 listeners. Get 25% off of 6, 12, and 24-piece collections in-store only. A winter-themed truffle box of raspberry, Grand Marnier, peanut butter, key lime, lemon, Thai spice, Frangelico, and more. Open 9:30 to 5:30 daily, Chocolat Celeste is located at 652 Transfer Road in St. Paul, just 4 blocks off I-94 at the Creighton Vandalia exit.
Chocolat Celeste, the way chocolate is meant to be.
Burger Mo's makes holiday gifting easy and rewarding. For every $100 in gift cards purchased, Valid at both Burger Mo's and the Downtowner Woodfire Grill, receive a bonus $20 gift card for yourself. Burger Mo's offers 20 fresh, never frozen burger varieties, as well as delicious appetizers, soup, salads, and unburgers, dogs, panini, shakes, and desserts, and two daily happy hours. Located at 242 West 7th Street in St. Paul, with plenty of free parking and online at burgermo's.com.
You're listening to AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the most informative source for progressive politics and news in the Twin Cities. Get involved online at am950radio.com, where you can sign up for our weekly newsletter, check out the local businesses that help make this content available, and stay up to date on the latest news and upcoming events. You can always reach us by email at comment@am950radio.com. That's comment@am950radio.com. Thanks for listening.
To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit veteranscrisisline.net for confidential support.
Join over 300,000 Minnesota families by choosing Warner Stelling to be your appliance specialist. Our customers have helped us be very good at selling, installing, and servicing appliances. We work hard to earn your business. Choose Warner Stelling to be your appliance specialist.
This is Chad, owner of AM950. I've been telling you about my friends at Snap Construction, who are arguably the most well-reviewed exterior construction company in the metro. Don't just take my word for it. Take a look at all their reviews online. Winter is the most cost-effective time of the year to complete your construction project. A majority of Minnesotans choose to have their work completed on their home in the summer when they should be enjoying the weather. As a result, the demand for labor in the summer is much higher. The most cost-effective way to improve or restore your home is in the winter due to the lower demand. Right now, Snap Construction is offering an additional 30% off of labor to the AM950 listeners on your next construction project between now and the end of February. Call 612-333-SNAP and mention AM950 for an additional 30% off. As always, Snap Construction stands by their work with a lifetime craftsmanship warranty. Don't wait to get a free estimate by calling 612-333-SNAP or find them online at snapconstruction.com. Financing options available.
With your AM950 weather, I'm Brett Johnson. Look for mostly cloudy skies today with a high near 29. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a low around 21. Thursday, partly sunny with a high near 32. And Friday, sunny with a high around 35. From delicious restaurants to bookstores to computers and technology to health and wellness and home and auto, you'll find it all at the AM950 advertisers. By supporting our advertisers, you not only help AM950, but you also support great local Minnesota businesses too. Find a full list of our advertisers at am950radio.com.
Hey, welcome back, AM950, Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Doug Padgett today. I want to spend much of the hour here talking about this homeless encampment and how we treat the homeless in Minnesota. I think there's a few reasons for that. One is some things in the news matter for this. There's going to be money turned up out of what was set aside to underwrite the stadium funding for the U.S. Bank Stadium. So $20 million a year are going to be available, and I'd like to see a movement in the state of Minnesota to make that available for supporting people with housing. Also, there's some good news on what's going on in the encampment, where some people are starting to move out of the encampment into a temporary, more permanent facility. And a third piece of news to come out about this is that Jeff Bezos, who's the billionaire owner of founder of Amazon, has made a $2.5 million contribution to Simpson Housing. And Simpson Housing is one of the Twin Cities' largest and most effective organizations working with the homeless. And it's a really significant thing. What a group like Simpson Housing, and if you've never looked them up, please do. They're fantastic. If you're thinking about someone to support at the year end because, you know, you feel charitable, or you feel like you want to do something good, or you feel like you want to be helpful, or, I don't know, you don't want to pay taxes on some of your money, whatever your motivation is that makes you to make a year-end contribution to good organizations, Simpson Housing is a great one. And what Simpson Housing will do with this $2.5 million pledge from Jeff Bezos is going to be incredible. It's going to help them organize their family housing program over the next 4 years. And they do a great job of helping families be sure that they have housing available to them. Now, as good of work as Simpson Housing does, and I'll tell you, they really do. I'm a huge fan. They're an important part of our cities. We shouldn't expect that a group like that should have to carry as much of the weight of caring for people that are houseless and under supported in their housing as we do. We need to move the care for this issue away from our nonprofits, the primary care, and into the infrastructure side of our society. We should think about it the way we think about clean air or clean water or a transportation system that works or an electric grid that's healthy and safe. When you have hundreds of thousands of people who don't have available to them what they need to have available to them as far as housing goes, we should look at that as a societal problem, not just as a human problem. And what I mean by that is a societal problem is the kind that you want to solve at the full society level that implicates everyone, government, all the way down. When you have an individual personal problem, personal level problem, well, there's a lot of support that can come for that for individuals and nonprofit organizations and civic groups and all the rest, churches, faith communities, nonprofit organizations of that type. They can step in and help with those personal problems. But we should not be expecting for our nonprofit sector to be solving societal structural problem. And this is something that, so for all the good work that Simpson Housing is doing, and I want them to keep doing it, you know, they opened shelters. They're the ones who are behind helping to build the temporary housing for people getting out of the encampment. They're some of the best in the world at thinking about this. So a $2.5 million contribution there, or a $10 million contribution if they were to get it, right? Which they should. I hope they do. That's also not the level to which we should be addressing this issue. It should be being addressed at a societal level, not just at a personal level. So, all right, hey, we've got a call here from Mark in Fridley. Hey, Mark, how are you thinking about this?
Hey, Doug, good to see you. We got to get back together again.
I think the same thing.
What we need to do, people, is look at the disease. This is a symptom. Mm-hmm. We need to bring manufacturing jobs back. A guy like Jeff Bezos makes $50,000 every 30 seconds. There was a 5th District Congressman, Martin Szabo, who every year introduced legislation to cap CEO pay at, like, I think it was 15 times the lowest paid worker.
Mm-hmm.
It's the separation of wealth.
Mm-hmm. It's a real problem, yep.
So this is we need to bring manufacturing jobs back. And we need to bring healthcare back. And the media forgot to tell everybody that about a month ago, the Pentagon was actually audited for the very first time, and they can't account for $21 trillion.
Yeah.
$21 trillion would buy a lot of healthcare and a lot of houses. But
yeah, sure would.
I want to follow
that's the kind
up on
of, that's the
Time
kind of number
magazine
that solves
cover.
The problems. Yeah. Okay, go on. Yeah.
Yeah, I just want to focus on the Time Magazine People of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
Are recognized journalists for their pursuit of the truth. This is long overdue, and they forgot to mention people that were journalists that were killed inside the United States, like Mike Hastings, Gary Webb, Danny Casolaro, Philip Marshall, and I would still say the suspicious deaths of and timely deaths of Tim Russert and Ed Schultz. And I need to tell people something right now. My name is actually Mark Novitsky. I'm a very well-known national security whistleblower starting in 2004, and I received some very serious threats today. And what I've got, and this goes back to information that Amy and Tina and Keith and Lori all know about, as did Mark Dayton and Al Franken, but specifically, what this is about is how Donald Trump, against all odds, got elected. And I'm just putting it out there. I've got some people that are coming out here to blow the cover off this story. But what, you know, if people need to understand that Mike Hastings was a hero, Gary Webb was a hero, Danny Casolaro was a hero. And when it takes courage to simply tell the truth,
yeah,
we have a problem. So I will keep
you guys
up to date and informed.
Yeah, would you?
See how this progresses.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks. I'll take that as a little bit of a transition. I want to just chat for a bit about some of the other big news on the national front. Hunter, I'm sure you've been thinking about it, that Michael Cohen was sentenced to, as I read it today, 3 years in prison, specifically from the charges brought by the Southern District of New York in that payments that he made to Stormy Daniels and to Karen McDougal.
Yeah,
and some of the other crimes around that.
Everything's starting to collapse on them now.
Dude, I'm telling you, yeah, it's really, I can feel it happening, you know, and we've talked about this before, that I think it needs to happen, but at the same time, it's really going to be a heartbreak, and it's going to be something that, that I think tears apart the fabric of our democracy. Because people support Donald Trump for all kinds of reasons, right? Many of which I don't understand or particularly give a lot of credence to when I do understand what they're for. But I was thinking about this today, that do you remember when Martha Stewart was arrested and prosecuted and sent to jail for her crimes of, I think it's investing crimes or like the yeah. SEC violations or something? Thankfully, in one sense, people didn't say, oh, if she's a criminal, then she's a horrible, horrible person who should, you know, is a scourge of the earth, and I will, you know, I will despise her for the rest of her life. What people said was, oh, I'm sorry she did a wrong thing. People do bad things. We can get over it, and I'm still going to, you know, watch her on TV when she comes on or follow her magazine or sort of take her decorating tips or whatever. And they sort of said, you know, I still think highly of Martha Stewart. People will be this way about sports stars that get into some kind of legal trouble. Well, there's an awful lot of people who support Donald Trump who, even though they're going to say, yeah, he was guilty, he committed a crime, they're going to say, well, that's not in... That doesn't undo it for me. Like, I'm not going to totally turn away from all the things that I liked about him simply because of that. Now, I'm a bit torn because I think the kinds of crimes that Donald Trump has committed were crimes that affected him actually becoming the president. I think it invalidates him being the president. So I think the types of crimes that somebody commits are important. But on the other hand, I think it's a good thing that we stop acting like people who break the law or even are convicted, whether that's Michael Flynn or Michael Cohen or eventually, I think it's going to be Jared Kushner and Don Jr. and Donald Trump himself, that these are not just horrible, horrible people that should be forever carry the scourge of somehow being less than valuable in our society, right? Simply because they committed a crime. If you've done any work with people who've committed crimes before, people that are felons, what you want to do with felons is to help people who committed felonies to pay some kind of restitution, to do some kind of rehabilitation, and to re-enter society as a full functioning member. Like that's what we want. We actually want our justice system and our criminal punishment system to bring about some kind of reintroduction back into society. So I think it's reasonable that someone would say, just because Donald Trump is a criminal, which now people are going to start to grant, they're doing it all over. I mean, I heard Rand Paul on Sunday say it's the biggest bunch of nonsense you could ever imagine when he was asked, well, what do you think about him, you know, lying to Congress, Michael Cohen lying to Congress? And his response was, well, what did he lie about? Right? Like it matters, right? It's like saying, hey, did you hear that Doug stole something from the stores? So I was like, well, what did he steal? You know, that's not really the point, right? The point is, you know, it was, well, you know, because he was trying to minimize the idea that his criminal activity could somehow be limited if it was just lying about something not important. It's outrageous on that one side. So I think we do need to never expect that Trump supporters are going to turn on him just simply because they've determined that he's a criminal, is the point that I'm trying to make. People don't do that. when you if one of your sports heroes or someone in the media is convicted of something, whether it be moral or legal, what we tend to do is feel badly that someone we thought well of and someone that we believed in did a bad thing. But we tend not to totally turn on a dime. So I think that those of us who are trying to bring about a change in our society and a change in our country vis-a-vis the actions of the president should never expect that people will turn against Trump because he's a criminal. What we should do is demand of those people that they don't go easy on Donald Trump simply because they like him. And I think we should spend less energy trying to say to people, but he's a criminal, therefore you should despise him, and spend more time saying he's a criminal, therefore he shouldn't get away with it. And I think that's the turn that we're going to need to be making in the next few weeks and months in this country, is to have a different conversation about what do you do, as Nixon put it, people want to know if their president is a crook. And that's a 2018 and 19 question as much as it was a 1972 question. Hey, Doug Padgett here, AM 950, Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Be back after the break.
Total Dog Company is the destination dog food and gear store on the west side of the Twin Cities, with easy access off of 169. We have a growing group of loyal customers and increasing numbers of referrals from dog professionals and dog parents because we carry quality products, give sound advice, and are easy to do business with. Total Dog Company keeps up on the latest developments in dog nutrition and products. Find us in New Hope off of 169 at 9432 36th Avenue North and at TotalDogCompany.com.
Native Earth Radio is proud to announce we're adding an extra hour.
1 hour's too fast.
That's right, Uncle Curtis.
Great. More time for me to share important information about our sacred animals.
And report national Native news with reporters all around the country. Saturdays from 1 to 3 p.m.
We are awake.
Find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and streaming live on Facebook.
Standard Heating knows the holidays are a time for lists. Shopping lists, guest lists, good and naughty lists. But don't forget about the most important list of all, Standard's 24-point checklist that comes with our professional furnace tune-up. During December, you can get this crucial tune-up for $25 off. Learn how you can save $25 on our furnace tune-up and all our other year-end deals today at standardheatingdeals.com/radio. Standard Heating and Air Conditioning, comfort you deserve.
Hi, this is Laura Hedlund. Check out Food Freedom Radio anytime on podcast. We've had some fun shows this fall. We had Brian DeVore with Wildly Successful Farming. We had the president of the Minnesota Farmers Union. We played clips from the Governor's Forum, so we had the whole show with Tim Walz. And then we'll be talking with IATP on the update NAFTA plan. So tune to Food Freedom Radio live Saturdays at 8 a.m. or anytime via podcast at am950radio.com. Seward Co-op, serving the community for over 45 years, invites you to shop their two convenient locations. Seward Co-op stores are committed to local producers and food you can feel good about serving your family and guests. Pre-order your holiday meal from Seward, local free-range Ferndale turkeys, handcrafted traditional vegetarian, vegan, and made without gluten sides, perfect for everyone at your holiday gathering. Find Seward at 2823 East Franklin Avenue or the Friendship Store at 38th Street and 3rd Avenue in Minneapolis. More at seward.coop.
Brending Electrolysis on Grand Avenue in St. Paul has been a leader in permanent hair removal for people of all skin types and backgrounds for over 30 years, celebrating diversity and priding themselves on finding the right treatment plan for each client's individual needs, regardless of race or gender. Services include electrolysis, body waxing, facials, microneedling, and permanent makeup. Book your 60-minute complimentary consultation, including a 15-minute treatment today, for beautiful, lasting results. Visit BrendingElectrolysis.com.
Hey, welcome back. AM 950, Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Hey, I wanted to, Hunter, I don't know if you saw this little story about Bite Squad, food delivery service, being sold for $321 million. Yeah, we'll talk about that in a second, but I think Brad's got some comments about my comments about how we think about Donald Trump. Hey, Brad from Robbinsdale.
Thanks for taking my call. You were saying that you know, that if people have done bad things, you know, they can still be redeemed and we shouldn't hate them and da-da-da-da-da. But I don't know about Kushner and some of the other folks, but Trump has been a horrible person his whole life. He's been found, they've paid fines for discriminating against black people in New York City in their housing market. He's cheated people. He's lied. He doesn't pay contractors. And then he goes bankrupt because he's a very smart person. He's very smart. He's a horrible person. And he's never had to pay consequences for anything he's ever done because his daddy always bailed him out. So,
you know, Brad, it's hard for me to argue with that sentiment. And the point I was trying to make, and it's a careful one to walk for me, especially with Donald Trump, because I agree. I think that his pattern of life is a way that I find to be unrespectable and one that should not be admired. And one of the things we have to deal with as a society is that for a long time, for decades, our media culture and other politicians and people, even lots of the social sectors, were totally comfortable with Donald Trump's life and behavior long before he became the president, right? Using his name as something that was synonymous with success when what you raise about his life has been known for a long time. I would even add in what I believe will be provable as his connection to organized crime. I think he's been running a criminal syndicate for a very long time. But still, he's a television star. He's someone who's highly esteemed. And we let a lot of this stuff pass, right? Well, the point that I was trying to make was what makes somebody when someone is found guilty of a crime, that's the thing that doesn't move someone into another category in most people's minds. Right? So if you think highly of someone and then they're found guilty of a crime, the fact that they become a felon does not mean that they move out of a place of esteem in your mind. And for those of us who are trying to have this conversation about what the impeachment of Donald Trump is going to mean and what's going to be required of us as a country, we can't expect that people who support him, they're going to lose that support simply because he's going to be found guilty of crimes, which I think that he will be. In other words, they're just different. They're not connected in people's minds like it would be for someone like Martha Stewart. But I think your larger point is really spot on, and that is, hey, we have some things to look at about whether this is a person that we find to be honorable and respectable or not. And that's a part where I think that the press and the media and a whole lot of public voices need to be saying more of the things that you're saying, just so people have a clearer picture of the person that we're talking about. Because the things that we're bantering around here as if it's common knowledge about him not paying contractors or going bankrupt or running sham businesses and ripping people off, there's still an awful lot of people who didn't even know that that was a thing. They did. They thought he was actually a successful business person.
Yeah, his university taught us that.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Hey, Brad, really appreciate your call, and I'm going to try to squeeze in a moment here for Randy from Coon Rapids. Hey, Randy.
Hey, how you doing?
All right, haven't heard from you in a while. Nice to get a call.
I don't know. I sit and listen to you guys. I don't know if psychotic and delusional land or whatever. I don't think Donald Trump did anything. And I don't think there's any Russian collusion. And as far as...
Hey, Randy, I'm afraid we're kind of losing you, kind of cutting out there. So I think you were saying that once again, you've tortured yourself by listening to people like me and others and feel that we're a bit delusional by thinking that Donald Trump has committed some crimes. And look, I grant that it's at this stage when the evidence has not been laid out before you about what Donald Trump has fully done, that it's possible to make the argument that he's not actually complicit in a crime. I think that's an argument that is weak. I don't think you can. I don't think it's supported by what we know as facts. I think it's going to become increasingly clear, however, that not only was he involved in crimes in the past, he currently is involved in a number of activities that have that run afoul of the law. And you cannot have a president of the United States whose past behavior and current behavior run afoul of the law. Now, I will say that, you know, it's Randy, strike me as one of the really true believers that there's no amount of information you will hear, including Donald Trump saying to Michael Cohen, here's how I want you to make the payments to these people, Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal. And that activity was something that was deemed to be a felony for Michael Cohen to have committed, that he committed that action and pled guilty and was sentenced in court. So the entire judicial system would have to be involved in some kind of a massive cover-up all going after Donald Trump for this to be the case. So I would just simply say it seems really clear to me that the facts are going to show that Donald Trump is in significant legal jeopardy. Now, people are welcome to do what Rand Paul did and what Paul Ryan has done and what a number of senators are saying, which is, look, these are not the kinds of crimes that we think we should be worrying about. Or as Donald Trump put it in the White House yesterday, this is peanut stuff. This is not the thing you take down a president about. These are unimportant issues when it comes to a president. That's an argument you're certainly welcome to make, but I think to say he's done nothing wrong is not the case you're going to make. And what I'll say to the people who think that Donald Trump is a hazard to the society and a hazard to the world order, which I do, the point is not to convince the Randys of the world, right? The point is for all of us to take seriously and solemnly the obligation that there is on the American public to support all people who are going to be making decisions about the impeachment and the removal of President Trump from office that they're going to have to make. And we're all going to have to not just be reflexive in our cynicism and despising of Donald Trump as well, right? Like, we all need to make sure that that we're looking at the information. I'm quite confident that there's enough there for him to be not only removed from office, but sent to prison, if that's something we would ever allow to happen to a president. And someone like Randy's going to say, no, there wasn't even enough there to say that he did anything wrong. So we're going to live in a split society on this. And at some point, people are going to disagree about the facts. And we're not quite there yet, but we're really close to it. We're very close to the moment where we're going to be talking about the facts of these cases and not just the implication of the information. And that's when it's all going to change. And I think that's going to be happening in the next 3 to 9 months. And that's a big deal. And I don't know if our country's ready for it. But we are here at AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Thanks for hanging in today. And we look forward to chatting with you tomorrow. Thank you, Patrick. Crushing the last lone American eyes. This is real.